subsystem of the jump drive capacitor buffer. The AI got around Skippy's lockdown of external communications by transmitting the virus through your ship's sensor field. That was frightfully clever. Where Valkyrie's sensor field overlapped the Dutchman's field, the virus caused a fluctuation in the sensor data which I could not explain. I thought it was merely a malfunctioning sensor processor, so I assigned a subroutine to examine the problem. And that, Skippy broke in, created a vulnerability that allowed the virus to infect the Flying Dutchman. That was your fault, Nagatha, he sniffed. Hey! Waving my arms, whether they were watching Valkyrie's internal cameras or not, I barked at both of them. You two stop this arguing right now. That's an order. Bad shit happened. Bad shit happens all the freaking time out here. The only thing I can guarantee, bad shit will happen again. What matters is, did you both learn something? Neither of them answered right away, a sure sign they were shouting at each other in magical AI time. Skippy responded first. Huh, he sighed. I learned that damned native AI is sneaky and smart. Even though it is not self-aware, the damned thing is remarkably clever. I underestimated it. One thing I can guarantee is that will not happen again.
I also learned a lesson. Nagatha sounded weary from arguing. There are no minor problems out here. Never again will I assign a subroutine to analyze a problem I cannot explain.
Okay. So, I was eager to get to the bridge so I could sit down. A lack of sleep and shock from being strangled by an alien bedsheet had me swaying on my feet. We all learned something. So there is one less bad thing that could happen in the future, and, I yawned.
It's all good. No harm done, right?
No harm, dear, Nagatha answered gently. Except that I cannot engage the jump drive until I have purged the virus from the buffers and any other places that fragments of the virus might be hiding. It is a frightfully devious little creation, a self-assembling weapon. If the Flying Dutchman had jumped, the ship would have gone boom.
Our fleet of two starships was drifting in deep interstellar space, so there was no rush to go anywhere. Except that we always had to expect the unexpected. How long until you have erased the virus?
Skippy is assisting me, she admitted. He has much more experience dealing with viruses of this sophistication.
That is true, Skippy bragged. In some ways, this virus reminds me of the worm that attacked me. For a weapon developed by the Maxorks, it is very impressive. Anywho, we will have it removed from the Dutchman within an hour. Probably. I can't make any guarantees.
Great. Thanks, the two of you. I paused with one hand on the doorway to the bridge. My hesitation was caused by a horrible thought that just struck me. Skippy, that virus infected the Dutchman through overlapping sensor fields?
Yes, I did not even know that was possible, he admitted.
There was more than a little admiration in his voice.
It was possible only because we were receiving a sensor feed from Nagatha, so the AI knew the Dutchman's sensor field settings in real time. That feed has now been terminated.
Uh-huh. My question is it possible for the native AI to transmit a similar virus inside this ship using the structural integrity fields or something like that?
What?
Skippy laughed.
No way, dude! Seriously? You think—
Oh, shit. Oh, shit, damn it! That AI has infected four missile warheads and was working toward exploding them, and, the integrity field of one reactor has been compromised.
Hey, best to take all the reactors and weapons offline as a precaution,
My night kinda went downhill from there. Hey, Joe, Skippy called me after I finished a duty shift on the bridge, during which I had almost nothing to do. All reactors aboard both ships were shut down. Jump drive capacitors were drained. Weapons were manually safed. People aboard the Flying Dutchman had extracted the triggers from the self-destruct nukes, despite Skippy and Nagatha assuring me those systems could not be hacked remotely. Probably could not be hacked remotely. It was the probably that had me acting paranoid.
What's up, Skippy?
I mumbled through a yawn. Could you come to medical? Lieutenant Colonel Smythe is awake. Wow. Suddenly I was not so tired.
That is great news.
Not so great.
Smythe is an outstanding special operations leader. He is also a terrible hospital patient. What he lacks... Skippy chuckled at his own joke.
Is patience. Get it?
So glad you explained that joke to me.
Oh, shut up! Will you help or not?
I am certainly going to talk with Smythe, if that is good for him.
He just woke up?
I began the process of awakening him about 4 hours ago when I determined he was well enough to move on to the next step in his recovery. It would be good for him to talk with people. Major Kapoor is with Smythe now. I warned both of them not to talk about work.
Huh, I snorted. How did that go?
Not well, he mumbled.
Okay, I'll go there now.
I turned around in the passageway, then had to think for a moment, which was the quickest way to the ship's medical facility. Valkyrie was a big ship, and still unfamiliar. Because I visited the Dutchman as often as was practical, I had to mentally switch the map in my head to the ship I was aboard.
Hey, any news about Adams?
No, Joe. He carefully kept his tone neutral.
You asked me not to give you details, or to say whether I am optimistic or...
Yeah, okay. You're doing the best you can. Mad Dr. Skippy had Adams in a medically induced coma, and after the first day I had not asked how she was doing. If Margaret Adams was awake, she would want me to focus on my job and not mope around worrying about one member of the crew. So that is what I was doing, or trying to do. It is not easy to deliberately not think about something, you know? When I got near the main entrance to the medical complex, which was buried deep within the ship's primary hull, I could hear two people shouting. There were three people talking, but one was the calm voice of Major Kapoor, barely audible. He was playing peacemaker, or at least trying to get the other two calmed down. I picked up my pace. One of the shouters had a British accent, so it was easy to guess who that was.
At ease, Lieutenant Colonel, I said as I strode through the airlock, which had both doors open.
Sir, Smythe struggled to rise to some semblance of being upright in bed, something that wasn't going to happen. He wasn't actually in a bed, he was resting in a tub, floating on a thick blue-greenish gel that supported his body. His thrashing around wasn't accomplishing anything other than making the gel fight his attempts to move.
Hold still, damn it!
Skippy's voice came from a speaker on the bulkhead. My guess was he didn't use the avatar to avoid further irritating Smythe. Man, speaking of irritated, Skippy was super frustrated. Not pissed off, not disgusted, just feeling powerless and upset.
Joe, make him stop moving!
First, I tried the good cop approach.
Smythe, you heard the doctor.
If we had a real bloody doctor, Smythe began.
Being good cop clearly had not worked. I leaned over his bed, gripping the sides of the tub.
That is a direct order, Smythe. Stand down now.
His body slumped. The glare on his face did not relax one bit.
Yes, sir.
Smythe's condition worried me. To put it delicately, he looked like shit. His face was gaunt, so his cheekbones stood out, and not in a good way. The bones of his one visible hand also were sharply outlined. He had lost a lot of weight and muscle tone. Most of his body was covered in a squishy material that looked like thick gauze soaked in honey. The gauze wrapped around one of his ears and covered the back of his head. What I could see of his skin was pasty and yellowish, and there was a dull film over his eyes, which darted back and forth like they couldn't focus. The man had been through hell and barely survived, I reminded myself. The skin tone and film on his eyes might be due to medical treatment. He could regain muscle tone, and would do that with the determination that had made him a Special Air Services soldier before he signed up for the Merry Band of Pirates. If Skippy had seen fit to revive Smythe, I had to trust our former star team leader was growing healthier, and would recover as best as Maxulk's medical technology would allow.
Colonel,
Kapoor caught my eye and inclined his head toward the airlock. I've got this, Major, I assured him, and was rewarded by a look of relief washing across his face.
Carry on.
I'll be back to discuss the training schedule, Kapoor told Smythe before walking out the doorway just a bit faster than was strictly necessary or polite.
If he had been acting as referee between Smythe and Skippy, I couldn't blame him for wanting to get away. Technically, with Smythe medically unfit for duty, Kapoor was in full command of the star team and was not subject to Smythe's authority. In reality, they both knew Smythe would return to partial duty as quickly as he could. Smythe's mere presence aboard Valkyrie would make it difficult for Kapoor to get the star team to fully buy into his leadership. Not that it mattered. What remained of our star team was too small and weak to accomplish much, and I had no mission in mind for them anyway. "What is the problem here?" I addressed the question to Smythe. Before he could respond, I added, "I won't bother bringing you up to speed on our status." He would have already demanded a sit-rep as soon as he was awake and could speak. "The problem, sir, is my bloody doctor will not listen to what the patient wishes. This is still my body." With his left hand, he gestured down to his shattered legs. His right arm was immobilized in a heavy cast with tubes and wires sticking out of it. "Skippy?" I wanted both sides of the story. "Stick to the facts, please," I cautioned Skippy, while looking at Smythe to let him know my words applied to him also. The patient has a name," I interrupted, "and a rank, which he has earned." "Fine," Skippy huffed. "Lieutenant Colonel Smythe has just been awakened from deep sedation, which was necessary to heal his extensive internal injuries. He risks re-injuring—"
"Skippy wants to grow my legs back," Smythe said.
I could not understand why that would be a problem. The Merry Band of Pirates had been regrowing limbs since we took the Flying Dutchman and gained access to miraculous Theranan medical technology. The Kristang and Ruhar had similar technology. In fact, the hamsters had considered regrowing limbs to be a basic medical capability that wasn't in any way remarkable. Our problem, before we captured Valkyrie, was a severe lack of proper medical nanomachines. When we took the Dutchman to Earth the first time, one of the technologies most in demand was Theranan medicine, as modified by Skippy for human biology. To the great disappointment of many people, UNEF had decided to keep most of our medical nano aboard the Dutchman for our use, with only small samples left behind on Earth for study. Even before the one-sided space battle we were now calling Armageddon, Skippy had been unable to fully heal injured members of the star team due to our severely limited supplies of medical nano. Katie Frey and several others were alive because they had been on the injured list when most of the star team raided a Maxalt space station to obtain power boosters. The injured people had either not suited up for the raid or remained aboard our ships as reserves. After Armageddon, though we had access to the extremely advanced medical tech of the Maxalts, Skippy had been unable to use it immediately because he had to extensively modify the equipment for human biology. We had lost people who survived the attack because Skippy had not been able to do as much for them as he wanted to. Margaret Adams was in a coma and might have permanent brain damage if she survived, partly because of the delay in getting nano-treatment for her. Now, we had enough Maxalt's medical nanomachines to treat thousands of humans. Yet Smythe was refusing to utilize a technology that many people on Earth desperately wanted. That got me pissed off. Reminding myself that I did not know the full story, I simply asked, "Explain, please. You do not want your legs regrown?" Smythe must have seen the outraged expression on my face.
"Not now, sir. Not now. I can grow my bloody legs back later after the mission is completed. Skippy tells me that fully regrowing my legs, learning how to use them, and restoring a proper level of fitness will take 5 months. I can't sit on the sidelines for 5 months. Colonel, Kapoor informed me how thin we are on personnel with no access to Earth for replacements."
Damn. It was a good thing I had not barked at him. Lesson learned, I told myself. "We don't currently have a mission plan for ST-Alpha," I told him. Then I added, "The universe may have a different idea for us. I would hate for you to be on the sidelines for 5 months, but..." I looked meaningfully to where his legs ended, encased in extra thick gel. "You can't use a mech suit without legs." Unless access to Maxalt's tech had given us a capability that Skippy hadn't told me about.
"No, sir, I can't. What can happen is Skippy could fashion a set of mechanical legs for me to use now. I can regrow my own legs later when I am taking a holiday on Earth."
"I find that difficult to believe," I said quietly.
"Sir,
Skippy has acknowledged the technology is available.
Not that, Smythe. I smiled down at him.
I can't believe you would take a holiday.
Oh. He laughed, and that threw him into a coughing fit.
That was good, actually. It would remind him that tough as he was on the outside, his special operations insides were just as vulnerable and squishy as any human.
Skippy, I asked.
It is true, he admitted wearily. I can fashion bionic legs for...
Bionic? I let the unfamiliar word roll off my tongue slowly.
Ugh, Joe, your ignorance of pop culture is truly shameful.
When you have time, you need to study up on the wildly popular 70s TV show, The $6 Million Man.
Great idea, I agreed, while in the back of my mind determining that when I have time would be never.
These bionic legs, they're what, metal and electric motors?
Nothing so crude, Joe.
Basically, they are nanofabric and gel motors that mimic musculature.
Okay, so what's the downside?
The downside is, Skippy was still exasperated, creating new neural pathways to learn how to properly use bionic legs is not simple or easy. It will be weeks before...
Do you doubt that Colonel Smythe has the focus, discipline, and determination to successfully integrate with these fancy bionic legs?
Well, no. The opposite, actually. He might push himself too hard and...
You can install a remote shutoff to deactivate the legs if Smythe is pushing too hard.
I guess so. Skippy rarely expressed uncertainty about technology.
Geez, Joe, this is kind of a radical step.
Are we that desperate? Can you answer that question by yourself?
He sighed.
Yes, yes, we are that desperate.
Outstanding.
Then proceed with fabricating new legs for Colonel Smythe.
Skippy admitted defeat.
Really?
Really. Smythe is an adult capable of making informed medical decisions for himself, I stated. What I did not state was that Smythe was also capable of pestering me about getting bionic legs until I gave in, so my decision was easy.
Thank you, sir. Smythe raised his left hand, and I gently bumped his fist.
Don't thank me yet. You have to go through the procedure and learn how to use those fancy new legs. That will require you to work very closely with Dr. Skippy for weeks at least.
Bollocks, Smythe said under his breath.
Also, because you just woke up a few hours ago, I am not fully convinced you are capable of making an informed decision about this. You can verify your wishes in 5 days.
5 more days?
Smythe was aghast.
The new bionic legs won't be ready for testing until 3 or 4 days anyway,
Skippy chortled gleefully.
Also, before you get out of that bed, I need to sedate you again, to insert the spleen and pancreas that I have been growing for you while you slept.
You hear that, Smythe?
I grinned.
You're getting a brand new spleen.
Well, Skippy mumbled, it's more like a quality pre-owned spleen, because I used remnants of his old spleen to slap it together.
Best to be careful with it for the first month, or two.
Sir,
Smythe looked up at me with an odd expression on his face.
No, the expression itself was not odd. He was pleading with me. It was odd that he was doing it.
Must I do this? Isn't the spleen one of those organs you don't absolutely need?
This may shock you, but I know what a spleen does. It filters blood, removes all damaged red blood cells, and creates and stores antibodies and monocytes. The reason I know this is my cousin Ron injured his spleen in a car accident, and the doctors originally feared they had to remove it.
You don't absolutely need legs, I replied.
I meant, Smythe, I continued.
You plan to live a nice quiet life after you get out of this hospital, or will you resume doing crazy shit as quickly as possible? It wasn't necessary to wait for him to answer. We both knew what he would say.
Normal people might not absolutely need a spleen. Special operators need all the backup they can get.
He sank back into the gel.
Skippy describing my spleen as slapped together is not a good way to build my confidence.
Oops. Sorry,
the beer can mumbled. I should have said I grew a spleen for you. I grew it from the tiny squishy bits I dug out of you. Mostly from bits stuck to the inside of your suit. It is not a new spleen.
but it does come with our dealership's renowned 17-point inspection program.
Hey, I winked. If you can't trust Skippy's quality used organs, who can you trust?
Smythe's head slumped back into the gel.
Bloody hell, he gasped.
Chapter 4. We chatted about the tactical situation, mainly about the problem of the ship's AI actively trying to kill the crew and thwart our ability to do anything useful with our massive battlecruiser. Dr. Skippy probably would have advised that I not get his patient stressed by discussing issues Smythe couldn't do anything about. That was bullshit. I knew Smythe. Not knowing what was going on would be more stressful for him. Now that he understood our status, he could think about what our next move should be. That would keep his mind happily occupied. Also, I really could use his advice because I had no idea what to do after we picked up the remaining military personnel from Avalon. Skippy, I called him after I got to my cabin. How is Smythe doing? He looks like hell.
He should be dead, Joe, our mad doctor answered defensively. Part of the reason he survived was his excellent physical condition, so think about that the next time you feel like skipping the gym.
Attaching bionic legs to him won't cause too much stress?
No, because I will not stop the process until his body is able to handle the additional workload. For the next 3 weeks, he is going to feel like warmed over crap. I can stitch him together, but all the stuff in his insides that are supposed to work nicely together won't. At first, the individual organs will be healing and will struggle to do their jobs. Once they are capable of doing whatever disgusting biological thing they do, the organs will need to work together. The healing process he will go through is no different from the post-surgical experience of any human, although Smythe will have the advantage of nanomachines monitoring and supplementing his natural abilities.
Should you wait 3 or 4 weeks to attach his new legs?
No. Much as I don't like the idea of rushing him back into service, getting up to walk is the best thing for him right now.
Okay, I yawned. Let me know how he is progressing. I don't need details. Just tell me if you're worried about anything. I'm going to get some sleep now.
Excellent idea, Joe. Your sheets are ready and the...
I will be sleeping on the floor in sweatpants, Skippy.
But... he was hurt. The new sheets are perfect. Completely inert. They took so much work to create. That damned native AI managed to corrupt the fabricators, so I had to...
Telling me the new sheets were made by corrupted equipment does not boost my confidence, Skippy.
Oh. Okay, good point. How about we pretend I didn't tell you about that? How about I sleep on the floor and you wake me up in 5 hours? Unless there is another emergency.
My blissful sleep on the floor did not last 5 hours. It did not last even 1 hour, because my slumber was interrupted by a dream. You might expect me to have a nightmare about being strangled again, particularly as my throat was numb from whatever scary medical stuff Skippy had done to me. That did not happen. My dream was about me using a pitchfork to round up all the sheets and towels and making them march down a passageway and through a doorway. They tried to fight me when they realized the doorway was the inner door of an airlock, but I got them stuffed in there, blew the outer door, and savored my revenge as I watched those fabrics twist as they drifted away in empty space and... That jerked me awake. Skippy! Skippy! Jeez, you're supposed to be snoozing. How come you get to yell at me when I interrupt your sleep, but when you wake yourself up? Those sheets and towels, all that shit. What did you do with it? I told you, I destroyed all of it. What, you think I would try to sneak some of it back into circulation? No, I... Okay, so I did recycle part of it.
What?
It's fabric, Joe. Not all of it is constructed of fancy nanoparticles. Most of the material is as inert as the contents of your skull. The only dangerous parts were the nanoparticles capable of movement. Oh, and the ones that were able to store electrical energy, plus the ones that directed the others or transmitted...
Very dangerous, yeah, I got that. What happened to the dangerous bits?
Well, some of it, the truly vicious stuff that had been infected and could not be deactivated, was too hazardous to put into the fabricator raw material storage. They might infect the fabricators again. I was tempted to dump that crap into reactor plasma, but if any of it stuck to the containment chamber and survived, we would be screwed. So,
I vented it overboard. I sucked in a breath, just like what happened in my dream. Overboard? Where is that stuff now? In space, duh, man, sometimes you... Show me! I ran over to the display on my cabin bulkhead. It was a sort of flat holographic tank. Okay, fine, I will humor the monkey. Here is Valkyrie, and here is video of me taking out the trash. As you can see, it is not moving, dum-dum. If you were worried about it somehow swimming through space and returning to the ship, you... The video was what he said, of the hazardous material being vented overboard on opposite sides of the ship. The clouds, shaped like half bowls, danced slightly as particles bumped into each other. But nothing was returning to the ship. That was not what I feared. "Where are those clouds now?" I demanded. Still in space, he explained slowly with a strongly implied duh. Somebody seriously needs sleep. You, show me where those clouds are now. Fiddling with the display controls was of no use. It just replayed the image I had already seen. The image zoomed out, changing only by Valkyrie at the center shrinking to a dot. The two clouds were still recognizably bowl-shaped, but dispersed and thin. Theoretically, they would expand outward in opposite directions until they reached the edge of the universe. Yes, you Professor Nerdnicks out there, I know the universe doesn't have an edge. You know what I mean. Also, I know that the pressure of solar wind and the galaxy would break the clouds up, and they didn't have sufficient velocity to escape the Milky Way's gravity well. That was not what I cared about. What I did care about was the other dot on the display, near the edge of both the display and one of the nanoparticle clouds. Nagatha, I shouted. Initiate immediate jump.
Joseph?
Her confused voice rang loudly in my earpiece.
I cannot initiate a jump. I have the same restrictions as Skippy. What?
Tell the duty officer jump option Sierra now, now, now! I had a moment of panic. Then the dot representing the Dutchman flared and disappeared.
Joe, Skippy groaned.
What? In the hell was that lunacy? Why would...
Oh. Oh. Slumping forward against the bulkhead, I leaned on one arm. You get it now? His whisper was barely audible.
Yes.
Did any of the contaminants reach the Dutchman? Because that is a very important question, I am going to run a careful analysis before I reply. The answer should be no, because I know the initial velocity of the particle clouds. However, it is possible the particles cooperated to collide in a way calculated to boost the velocity of some particles, those sneaky little MFers. It is possible that a small number of particles showered down on the Dutchman's hull. Warn Nagatha. Already sent a message. She should receive it in 19 seconds. Our star carrier had not jumped far. Jump option Sierra was a pre-programmed short emergency jump just to get clear of an immediate danger. Great. Walking back to where I had been sleeping, I shrugged off my sweatpants. Then remembered the door to my cabin was wedged open in case the native AI hacked the mechanism and tried to cut my head off. Pulling up my sweatpants, I scooped up my uniform and ducked behind a cabinet to dress.
Joe, you're not going back to sleep?
I'm not sleeping now, that's for sure.
Understood.
Joe, how did you know?
He was mystified.
I didn't.
But my subconscious mind knew and was trying to warn me. I had a dream of throwing sheets and towels out an airlock.
Shit.
Damn it!
That made me freeze with my pants on only one leg.
What's wrong?
Ah! Even your unconscious monkey brain is smarter than me.
Hey, don't beat yourself up about it.
He sighed with relief.
Thanks, man.
I plan to tell the whole crew and they can beat you up about it.
Oh, Joe, I hate you so much.
An exhaustive examination of the Flying Dutchman's hull determined only a few hazardous particles had reached that ship. It still took 7 exhausting hours to purge the star carrier of the contamination. Then Skippy and Nagatha continued scrubbing the digital viruses from both ships, a process that took 4 days.
I say viruses because they discovered there was more than one wave of viral attacks, more than one delivery method, and more than one way for the virus fragments to assemble themselves into deadly weapons. After 4 mind-numbing days of erasing viruses, only to find they had reassembled themselves, Skippy was tired, and he was pissed off.
"Okay, Joe," he said through a damned good imitation of a yawn. "We are ready to restart the reactors. Should be at full power within 13 hours. I am taking it slow and careful."
"You sure about that, Skippy? Maybe you should take a break first."
"Nah, I'm okay. I had Nagatha analyze my functioning, and I am okie-dokie, except for really, really wanting to kill this ship's AI.
The fact that he had asked Nagatha for help and allowed her to poke around inside his head told me how worried he was.
"The AI has got you super pissed off, huh? Dude, you have no idea. I never fought an AI before. Well, there was that elder AI on our renegade mission, but that thing was severely degraded and insane, and the battle was too short for anything other than brute force tactics. And on that same mission, I outsmarted a Maxolt's AI like the one controlling this ship, but back then all I had to do was predict its reactions to a simple stimulus. Joe, I now have an answer to the question of why the native AI waited so long to act."
"Yeah, I was wondering about that. It is a Maxolk's system, yet it did nothing while we trapped a battle group outside the galaxy. If it attacked us while you were doing the chain of wormholes thing, it could have seriously screwed up the operation. But the answer is I think it couldn't act at that time. It wanted to, but it hadn't yet found a way around my monitoring and control. Now I realize that ever since we took this ship, that damned thing has been studying me, watching me and Nagatha, and developing a surprisingly sophisticated model of us. It was able to predict what I would do. It has been watching and planning and patiently waiting to find a way around my control. Shit! I have never been so humiliated in my entire life. No?
Well, how about whenever a monkey thinks up a clever idea?
Nah, I'm over that. There is something about biological intelligence that generates innovative ideas. Like I said, I outsource the task of dreaming up ideas to that sack of gray mush in your skull. But the ship's AI is like me, in a very crude way, of course, he hastened to add. It bugs me that I nearly lost a battle of wits to an AI that rides on a physical substrate. Ugh. This makes me glad that I never contacted other elder AIs through the collective. They would be laughing their asses off at me right now.
It was studying you. Is that why it waited so long to act?
Yes. It could not risk acting until it knew my attention was elsewhere. Joe, the attack on the crew, when it tried to strangle you with a bedsheet, was just a diversion. If it had succeeded in killing you, that would have been a bonus, but not the focus of the attack. It attacked the crew to divert the attention of me and Nagatha, and it very nearly succeeded.
Crap. Skippy, can we ever risk taking this ship into action?
He let out an exasperated breath. I do not know. It sucks that we have the most badass ship in the galaxy, and we can't trust it not to kill us. Joe, right now I cannot guarantee some critical system would not lock up if we were to attack a Maxolt ship. Before you ask me a bunch of ignorant questions, I am removing the native AI's access to systems where failure would be catastrophic. Systems such as missiles, shields, reactors, the jump drive capacitors, the...
Whoa! After you get done cutting the AI off from all that stuff, what will it be responsible for? A toaster?
Well, that is a bad example, Joe, he muttered. Yesterday, I discovered that damned AI had hacked into the galley's power feed. It was planning to electrocute anyone who used a toaster, or a blender, or pretty much anything that uses electricity.
Slapping my forehead, I groaned.
We now have to be afraid of a toaster?
No, no, Joe, he chuckled. You do not need to fear your faithful toaster.
Ah, that's great, Skip.
You did need to fear it until yesterday, but not now. Unless, you know, the ship's AI outsmarts me again. Hey, maybe you should stick to untoasted bread until I can rebuild the galley's power feed. Except, I had to cut power to the ovens, so you won't be baking bread for a while. I slapped my forehead.
Skippy,
I've been sleeping on the floor of my cabin, in sweatpants, using a rolled-up sweater as a pillow. We can't use the showers because you are afraid a power surge to the on-demand water heaters could zap us with like a million volts. I'm keeping my cabin door jammed open because you are afraid a power surge could slam the door closed and crush me. Most of the dropships are useless because the virus wiped their control systems and you haven't completed repairs yet. Please, please tell me you have some good news. Because otherwise, we are going to go back aboard the Dutchman and send Valkyrie plunging into the nearest star. Don't be hasty, Joe, he pleaded. You still intend to go back to Avalon? Yeah, why? Because while we are flying there, you won't be doing anything stupid like taking us into combat. Going on a nice, safe mission to Avalon means I can keep weapons and shields and other systems offline so I can concentrate on installing new independent control systems for navigation and the jump drive. Cool. If that works, can you do the same thing with weapons? No. I used up much of our spares of those components, and I had to strip some stuff away from the Dutchman's upgrades. Don't worry. Nagatha is adjusting. It won't affect her. Some of the components we need require exotic materials that the ship's fabricators can't manufacture. Of course they do. Wonderful. Maxolt's warships have access to an extensive network of shipyards and support vessels. They don't need to carry a bunch of spare parts for every system. They also don't have to worry their AI will try to kill them. Have you made any progress fixing that? Have you read my PowerPoint presentation about how I propose to modify the ship's native AI? You know I did. You also know I talked with Nagatha about it. Yes, and I know that Nagatha recommended you approve the experiment. Calling it an experiment is not a great way to sell your plan, Skippy. Oh, I am not a marketing expert, you knucklehead. How about you pretend I said it in a very persuasive way? No, I want to know my decision was not influenced by a slick marketing campaign. Okay, go ahead. Seriously? He asked with suspicion. That was not a lame form of sarcasm. Seriously. Right now we have a badass battlecruiser we can't use effectively. At worst, if your experiment fails, we have to abandon Valkyrie and blow it up. Either way, we can't be any worse off than we are now, right? Joe, did you just ask me if there is any downside to my plan? Sort of, yeah. Remember what happened the last couple times you asked me if there was any downside? Shit. Yes. How about we pretend I never asked that question? What question? Thank you. Restart the reactors and we'll set course for Avalon.
Collect the probes, Commander Iliath ordered from the bridge of the Maxolk's hegemony patrol cruiser, Vortan. Subcaptain Turnell answered without needing to consult the holographic display, as the same information on the display was also fed directly to her optic nerves.
Two of the probes will be severely degraded by the time they emerge from the photosphere, she noted.
Discard them, Iliath responded.
She would have liked to discard all the probes and move on, but she might need the specialized probes in the future. Also, sensor devices capable of descending into the convection zone of a star were rare and expensive, and the fleet would expect her to account for them when the Vortan returned to base. Therefore, she had to remain patient while her patrol cruiser loitered uselessly, waiting for the probes to return to their storage bays. Until the devices were securely stowed away, her ship must remain motionless relative to the star, providing an easy target for the ghost ship. There was no reason to think the ghost ship would strike there, but there was also no reason to think that it would not strike. The Admiral had offered a pair of destroyers to escort Vortan on that phase of the mission, an offer Iliath had declined. Escort ships were in high demand to protect the convoys that were suddenly necessary. She could not justify taking two ships that were needed elsewhere. Part of her calculation in declining the offer was that lightly armed escort ships had proven to be of little use against the enemy. Bringing two destroyers to protect the Vortan might only provide two more victims for the ghost ship. Outwardly, Iliath showed no sign of fear or even concern. Inside, she was on alert for sudden combat. Vortan's current action was the investigation of the star in the system where the Bosphorak used to have a facility, supposedly for the purpose of developing atomic compression warheads.
The birds had lost that facility on the planet they called Karaka, two heavily armed orbiting battle stations, and a base on Karaka's moon. Despite conducting an exhaustive investigation of their own, the Bosphorak had no explanation for how or who had caused the moon base to fire on the battle stations and the planet. Considering the strong, multiple layers of security around the moon base, it appeared impossible that an enemy could have gained access to the base. Also, the base had not sent any distress signal until shortly before it fired on the planet, giving no indication that it had been under assault. The Bosphorak concluded that somehow their own personnel had, for unknown reasons, attacked their own facilities. Deepening the mystery was the fact that the moon base and another nearby part of the surface had been struck by nuclear fusion devices. The devices had been crude, of a type not seen in the galaxy for thousands of years. But they had been effective in erasing evidence of what happened. The birds had not been able to identify the source of the plutonium used in the nukes, and the Vortan's own sensors had frustratingly been unable to add any information. Where the nukes came from was unknown, and while it was a minor and unimportant part of the overall mystery, it was annoying to Iliath that such a simple question eluded answers. After the Maxalts received the stunning confession that a rogue faction of Bosphorak had destroyed two of their patrons' ships, the mystery of who had caused the havoc on Karaka suddenly had a completely unexpected explanation. The rogue birds had blown up their own facility to conceal the fact that the atomic compression work was cover for research into banned Elder technologies. That neatly explained what happened to the moon base, and why nuclear weapons had taken out the hidden cavern under the moon's surface where the Maxalts had stored equipment. The Bosphorak had nuked the storage cavern after they raided it for useful equipment. The explanation made sense. It nearly tied up all the loose ends. It satisfied the curiosity of the Maxalts' leadership. To Iliath, it was too neat. Other than the shocking confession sent to the Maxalts' government, there was no evidence that the Bosphorak had acquired technology far beyond the capability of their patrons. The purpose of the Vortan being in the Karaka system was to seek evidence to verify the story told by the birds. So far, she had found nothing to confirm the unlikely tale.
Turnell,
she pinged the other officer privately, avoiding the use of crude voice communications that could be overheard.
Do we need to wait for the last set of probes? The data collected already is clear. This star shows unmistakable signs of having been subjected to experiments with Elder-level technology.
Yes, I agree, Turnell replied cautiously.
She had learned the Vortan's new captain often asked questions that seemed simple, yet were not. Neither Turnell nor Iliath were experts in the field of stellar architecture, but Vortan's AI had been upgraded before the mission to be an expert, and that oversized computer concluded the star had absolutely been experimented on.
The question we have not answered is when.
When?
Turnell repeated.
When were the experiments conducted?
Sub-Captain Turnell could not understand why it mattered exactly when the rogue Bosphorak had attempted to make the star create a massive, focused flare. She understood the question did matter to Iliath, and therefore the question must be important. So Turnell had to act as if it were important to her also.
We know the star's internal structure exhibited signs of distress when our initial force arrived here.
That force had conducted only a hasty, high-level analysis before gleefully flying off to strike a Bosphorak research station that likely had absolutely no connection to the rogue faction. As if that mattered.
Yes.
In her transmitted thought, Iliath added a tiny element of patient indulgence. Her second-in-command had not understood the issue. Turnell knew she had not hit the mark with her comment about the initial investigation.
You are asking whether the star was experimented on before the moon base was nuked, or after? Correct.
That thought included an undertone of satisfaction.
The story we have been told is that the rogue faction blew up their facilities here to erase evidence of what they were really doing, yet they could not erase evidence of how they altered the star's internal structure. So, the question is why would they bother to destroy their research base on the planet?
Turnell considered that for a moment before answering.
Perhaps because if we had captured that base, we could determine how their technology functions?
That was not the answer Iliath wanted to hear. Nevertheless, it did make a certain sense.
Perhaps. If only we had a time machine to see what the star looked like before the moon base was nuked.
Turnell did not need to think about that remark. She knew exactly what her captain was hinting at.
Should I calculate a jump?
Iliath's lips curled back, exposing her upper fangs. Aloud, she said,
Yes, do that. We can retrieve our probes later.
The Vortan jumped far outside the star system, far enough that photons emitted by the star had left their source before the moonbase attacked the research station on Karaka. With telescopes focused on the tiny dot that was the local star, they were looking backward in time. Impatiently, Iliath waited for the ship's AI to analyze the incoming sensor data.
What is taking so long?
She finally demanded, after the infuriating machine had cycled through the data 6 times. It is impossible to reach a conclusive result, the AI replied. We are too far from the source. The effects of alterations in the star's structure largely occurred in the convection zone. At this distance, those effects are masked by turbulence in the photosphere. Iliath was not giving up so easily.
It is possible to create a model of the photosphere accurate enough to filter out the turbulence.
The AI, which could think faster than lightning, hesitated before answering. Officially, Maxulk's AIs were not fully sentient beings. Unofficially, Iliath thought the machines were all too aware of their existence and were too wary of displeasing their masters. She needed truthful answers, not answers that made the AIs look useful.
It might be possible, the machine admitted. It would take a considerable amount of data. We have extensive data on the star from before our people abandoned this system,
Iliath reminded the AI. True. Accessing that data now. It will be necessary to get more current data to determine how the photosphere has changed over time.
What do you need for that analysis?
I have loaded a series of 23 jumps into the navigation system, the AI replied. They will take us around the star to view it from all angles and at varying distances to create a timeline. Gathering data from 23 additional points in space and time seemed excessive to Iliath. Was the machine hoping she would consider the effort too time-consuming and forget the idea? Was the AI afraid that it could not accurately create a model of the star's outer layer and wanted to discourage her? Deviousness in her colleagues was to be expected, even admired if done skillfully. Deviousness in an AI was cause for the machine's memory to be wiped.
Very well,
she consented, hoping to cause dismay.
Initiate jumps as you see fit.
The AI was anxious about its ability to model the star, as anxious as a non-sentient collection of virtual circuits could be. After jumping 23 times and spending an eternity of AI time to crunch the data, it was surprised to achieve a workable solution. Commander Iliath. It waited for an auspicious time to announce the result. Iliath had just stepped out of her personal shower, after spending a pleasurable few hours with a crewman in her bed. From the AI's observations, its masters were typically in a receptive mood after intimate encounters. I have completed the analysis you requested. Iliath was indeed in a good mood, which is why she was only briefly annoyed at the use of requested, when in fact what she had done was to order the machine to do its job.
You have run the current data through the model?
Yes. To be clear, by current data, you are referring to the photons we are receiving now, which were emitted by the star before the moonbase was destroyed by a nuclear device?
Yes.
That little quibble by the machine made Iliath clack her fangs together. Even with the model, it is impossible to definitively state whether the star's internal structure was altered before the incident at the moonbase. However, it added quickly, anticipating the ship's captain would be irritated. The model consistently states there is a 4% certainty that the star was not affected by experiments at the time the moonbase was destroyed. She was disappointed.
4% is hardly conclusive. The 4% is consistent, the machine emphasized. 6.3 billion variables were run through the model, and the result is a distinctive pattern. The internal structure of the star was not altered before the moon base was destroyed. Commander Iliath, the next logical step is to perform a series of jumps closer to the star from this position to see when the model indicates the star was affected by experiments. Iliath had been about to suggest the same course of action.
Agreed. Jump at your discretion.
The Vortan's AI wasted no time in drawing a conclusion. Commander, assuming the model is accurate, the... She broke into the machine's announcement.
Can we assume that?
The model continues to show it is 4.16% more likely that it is accurate, rather than it is wrong. The model should be validated by fleet intelligence. I have prepared a package containing the model and all of our data. The package should be sent to the next relay station we encounter.
Iliath had to remind herself that the changes in the star were subtle. So subtle they had to send specialized probes deep inside the roiling fire to confirm the altered patterns were not a sensor glitch.
It was impressive that the AI had created a model that could analyze the star's internal structure from more than a light month away. The machine had done well. It never occurred to her to offer words of praise to it.
Very well. Assume the model is accurate. What have you found?
The experiments, if that is what happened, occurred well after the moon base was destroyed. The first sign of alterations in the star's structure were detected only shortly before the Bosphorok notified you of treasonous activity by the alleged rogue faction.
Iliath took a moment to process that information. Then,
why did you say, if that is what happened? You believe it is possible that the changes in the star's structure are not caused by experiments?
Since it is now clear the information provided by the Bosphorok does not match all the facts we can independently verify, it seems prudent to question other aspects of the story.
Why would someone go through the effort of changing the star's structure if the effort was not a test of technology capable of turning the star into a weapon?
As I am only a machine, I cannot speculate about the motives of sentient beings. However, one possibility is the purpose of tampering with the star was to provide evidence pointing to the Bosphorok.
She did not need to take time to consider that notion, for it aligned with her own suspicions. Therefore, she did pause to consider the idea, as she knew that confirmation bias could lead her down the wrong path. If her conclusions were drawn to support a theory rather than the facts, fleet intelligence would brutally point out her errors and judgment.
You also said alleged rogue faction.
Again, we have no evidence that a rogue faction of Bosphorok even exists, other than a message that cannot be traced back to its source. That message could have come from the Theranin, or the Rindaloo.
Leave that possibility out of your report, she ordered. Calculate a jump to collect our probes, then we will move on to our next objective.
Yes, Commander. May I inquire about our next objective?
We're going to investigate another part of the story and the mystery message.
She now felt confident in referring to the confession message as a mystery. The AI was correct. No group of Bosphorok had claimed responsibility for sending the message. Other than the contents of the message itself, there was no evidence the message had been sent by the birds at all. Commander, if we find more evidence which disagrees from the alleged facts in the message, what will you do?
The next logical step. Find out who did create and send that message. I do not like being lied to.
Chapter 5. What do you need me to do, John? Chang asked quietly while we sat on uncomfortable folding chairs in his tent on Avalon. Before we landed on Avalon, I had sent a briefing packet to him to distribute down his short chain of command. The packet explained the current situation and that I intended to take all remaining military personnel off Avalon. Plus, I wanted to bring along a couple of biologists to take care of the hydroponics gardens aboard the Flying Dutchman. We would be raiding most of the food supply from Avalon, but fresh food from the hydroponics was important for health and morale. With us still cut off from Earth by the Maxalt's blockade of the Gateway Wormhole,
and knowing there was nothing we could do to stop the kiddies from getting to Earth within the next couple years, keeping morale up would be important. Kong, we used each other's first names because we were both colonels. I need you to command the Dutchman. Nagatha is doing a great job as the control AI, but she still has the restrictions she inherited from Skippy. She can't actually fly the ship or authorize release of weapons. I can give you two pilots, one fully qualified to fly the Dutchman, and one on an accelerated training program. He gave me a wry smile. He knew that accelerated training program meant the other pilot had only recently started learning the basics of the starship's controls. I should learn to fly also, as a backup, he frowned. Hey, I qualified to fly, I reminded him. How hard could it be? Another wry smile. Just enough to let me know he appreciated the joke, not so much that he questioned my ability to pilot a star carrier. Am I getting an executive officer? Anyone who can double up? I shrugged. Kong, I can only spare 7 people for the Dutchman, and 2 of them will be biologists. One of the biologists was in the Air Force, I added. He nodded, unconvinced, and tapped his laptop. I know the biologist you mentioned. She was in the Air Force 7 years ago. As a medic, it's the best I can do. The Dutchman will be our stores and support ship. She shouldn't be going into combat. Because we both know the universe loves to screw with us, I need an experienced captain there in case you run into trouble. When we run into trouble, he corrected me. You want to take all military personnel off Avalon? Regardless of specialty? I don't have a choice. At this point, I need warm bodies, and we'll train them up as best we can. He pointed to his laptop and tapped the display. Here's an example. She's a U.S. Air Force tech sergeant. Her specialty is maintaining V-22 Ospreys. There are no V-22 up there. He pointed to the roof of the tent. There won't be any V-22s flying down here either, because we're taking all the pilots with us. That tech sergeant can relearn which end of a rifle is dangerous, or she can retrain to maintain dropships. Think of it as our new Blue to Green initiative, I said. The original Blue to Green effort had been way back during the Iraq War, the second one. The U.S. Army and Marine Corps had needed more boots on the ground, and so Navy and Air Force personnel had been offered an inducement to transfer services. The inducements were a carrot, with the stick being personnel drawdowns by the Navy and Air Force. Some people either transferred or they were out. I expected my new Blue to Green program to be just as popular as the first. I've had all support personnel down here cross-training, he agreed. All right, Joe. I'll take the Dutchman. Will Sims be your XO again? Yes, and she's not happy about it. She and that Frank Muller guy are serious, I think. I haven't pried into her personal life. They are serious, I confirmed. She told me. She'd been angry when I announced I was pulling her off Avalon to fly around the galaxy on an as-yet-undefined mission with no end date and no realistic hope of saving Earth. At first, she had been angry with me, especially after she learned about all the people we had lost. Then I guess she decided to be angry at the situation instead, either because she did not blame me, or because blaming me wouldn't accomplish anything useful. Sims was good at compartmentalizing her feelings. We had to work together as an effective team, so she might be saving her anger with me for after the mission was complete, or after it was clear we could not complete whatever the mission was. Chang gave me sort of a side eye. The two of you can work together? I nodded once. She's a professional, and I need her, and she knows that. He closed his laptop and looked around the small tent, mentally packing it for departure. What is the mission? Working on it, I replied. I'm hoping we can use Valkyrie to somehow delay the Maxulk's attack against Earth, or hurt their ability to support a long-distance campaign against our homeworld. That is a long supply line, I emphasized. If we can make them question whether our little world is worth the effort, that buys time for us. Buys time to do what? To hope, I said with an automatic shrug that was not appropriate. I needed to be more careful with my body language. I know what you mean, Joe. We've served together long enough. At this stage, hope is good enough. We've succeeded with less. Despite his words, he looked uncomfortable. What is it, Kong?
He looked away, pretending to study something on his laptop. I knew he was gathering his thoughts.
I've heard a rumor about Valkyrie. You are not in complete control of the ship?
We've had trouble with the native AI, I admitted. Skippy is working on it. He has a plan, I added.
His plan? Or yours?
The way Chang asked the question, he was hoping the plan was mine. I snorted. His? Come on, all I know about computers is you press the power button. If it doesn't boot up, I call someone.
You have confidence in this plan?
A shrug was my answer. Skippy does. Nagatha agrees it is worth trying. Otherwise, I found myself clenching my fists. We went through a lot of trouble and lost a lot of people for nothing.
That wasn't your fault, Joe.
I keep telling myself that.
Does it seem odd that Skippy can't control a simple Maxalt AI?
It's not a matter of control. I was defending Skippy, and that was unfamiliar to me. There's only so much he can do without destroying and replacing the thing. That substrate is integrated into the ship in a way that would be tricky to dig out. We don't have the substrate, the hardware, to build a replacement AI. If Skippy can't get the thing to cooperate, or at least stop trying to kill us, we may go on a shopping trip for parts to build a replacement. It's either that, or we all go aboard the Dutchman and drop Valkyrie into a star.
Shopping? He raised a slightly amused eyebrow. You mean stealing?
Unless you have a Maxalt's credit card, yeah. I looked at his laptop. How long before you can wind up things down here and get everyone upstairs?
3 days, he answered, without needing to refer to notes. I've been planning for contingencies since you left the last time. There isn't a plan for pulling only the military personnel off this rock, but we can adjust. Are we taking Chotek with us?
No, I wasn't planning to. You think we should?
I think we owe it to ask him, Chang admitted. He will decline the opportunity. His place is here now, one way or the other.
Okay, good. There is still the possibility that you could be using the Dutchman to transport humans from Paradise to Avalon if that becomes necessary. He knew what I meant, if the situation became truly desperate. We will need someone here working to prepare Avalon to be a viable colony.
Our crops are growing well.
He pointed outside the tent flap with a smile. I had seen healthy fields of crops planted all around the main encampment. The fields had been expanded far beyond the size needed for experiments. The survey team was already growing much of their own food supply. Good, because we'll be taking a lot of the prepackaged food with us.
Is there any possibility of recruiting pilots and soldiers from Paradise? He asked.
I shook my head. Not unless we have no other choice. It would be almost impossible to conceal the missing personnel from the Ruhar. Plus, if we ask people to come with us and they say no, we can't trust they won't talk eventually.
That leaves our spread very thin.
5. What?
5. I only need 5 people aboard the Dutchman. Me, 2 pilots, and the biologists.
That surprised me. That leaves you spread real thin.
He grinned, but only with his mouth, not his eyes. We're not going into combat, remember?
Right. You're gonna get lonely over there.
Our ships won't be separated forever, will they?
Unless I'm taking Valkyrie into danger, we should be flying in formation.
Then our crews should be able to transfer between ships, get a change of scenery until you have to go into action.
I had not thought of that. Kong, that's a great idea.
He turned in his chair, bent down, and opened a small fridge under the desk. Then let's drink to another hopeless mission.
I grimaced, then wiped that expression off my face as quickly as I could. That's not Baijiu, is it? That Chinese beverage was similar to vodka, and I didn't like vodka either.
No, he held up the bottle. Japanese whiskey.
I hesitated as he set a plastic cup in front of me. Technically, we're on duty.
Joe, he poured 2 fingers of liquid into my cup. You need this.
Yeah. I took a swig, and it burned my throat, which was still sore from being crushed by a murderous alien bedsheet.
I do.
After drinking whiskey with Chang, I indulged in a glass of schnapps with Hans Chotek. It was a cliche that we drank schnapps because he is from Austria, but that is my fault. The schnapps wasn't his. I had brought it down from the Dutchman as a gift.
This is goodbye, then? I asked, holding up my glass as a toast.
He shook his head.
I hope not. We should say Auf Wiedersehen. It means something like, until we meet again.
Yeah. I clinked my glass against his.
That's better.
You sure you won't change your mind?
Come with you?
No. He tipped his head back and downed the last of the schnapps from his plastic glass.
You plan to fly around out there smashing things? I can't be of any use to you.
No. It is best that I remain here. Do what I can to get this world ready to support colonists. Whether they are from Earth or Paradise, they are going to need food. On some place to live.
If we're able to bring people from Earth, we can bring supplies and equipment also. Anyone coming from Paradise will have only what they can carry with them, I said, knowing even that probably wasn't true. If we pulled humans off Paradise, they would be bringing only what they could stuff into their pockets, because we would be jamming as many people as possible into each dropship. I hope we never got that desperate.
Will you be okay here?
He gave me the tiniest of shrugs.
My colleagues still think that Skippy faked the order, placing me in authority.
He referred to the secret UN order created on Earth, and not by Skippy, that gave Hans Chotek overall command of the Beta site in case of emergency. I had just invoked that order. The other three UN commissioners did not like him taking away authority they thought belonged to them, but screw them.
I will be fine. We all will, if you come back here safely.
We will do the best we can. We have nearly 15 months at least before the battle group is declared overdue. I have some ideas that I've been discussing with Smythe about how we can disrupt the Maxalks without exposing our secret.
There's nothing you can do to help Earth?
There was a hopeful question in his words, but no hope in his eyes. He knew the truth.
No, not in the long run. Not that we can see. Even if we are successful in hitting the Maxalks, throwing them into confusion, no way can they ignore the loss of an entire reinforced battle group, and no way can our one ship stop their entire fleet. Skippy wargamed this situation at my request. In the best scenario, Earth has less than 3 years before aliens make the surface uninhabitable. Worst case, about 2 years.
He looked at the schnapps bottle, decided against it, then changed his mind.
As you Americans say, what the hell?
He poured the fiery liquid for both of us.
We were so helpful once. We saved the world.
More than once, I agreed.
Hans. I used his first name, and he didn't object.
I'm sorry about this.
Circumstances were beyond your control.
Skippy is correct.
Ultimately, all we were doing was delaying the inevitable, Joe.
He held up his glass to me.
Good luck to you out there. Vaya con Dios.
My last meeting on Avalon was with Dr. Friedlander. That was right after the three other UN commissioners presented me a list of demands, and I diplomatically told them to go fuck themselves. By the way, those were the actual words I used. After Armageddon, I was done taking shit from political hacks. Whatever authority the commissioners once had, out in the wilderness of the universe, was meaningless after we got cut off from Earth. I told them they had two choices: help the science team with growing food on Avalon, or starve. Hans Chotek was in charge of the little colony. They could take their complaints to him. Even better, they could complain to each other. Either way, I didn't care. Anyway, after an unpleasant conversation with the Three Stooges, I was hoping that talking with Friedlander would cheer me up. I was wrong. My first clue was the way he stormed across the dirt from the field where he had been working. It looked like he intended to punch me, and his fists were balled up. I tensed. Hell, if the guy wanted to take a shot at me, I would let him. It was my fault that he was cut off from his family. He stopped a few feet away, just outside punching range.
You son of a bitch, he breathed.
Hi, Doc, I replied, holding my hands up. His fists were clenching and unclenching. He was not going to punch me, but he wanted to.
When I heard a ship jumped into orbit,
He looked away.
Sorry, Doc. You hoped we found a way back to Earth? For a moment, I had hope. We all did. Sorry about that. No, we haven't. Not yet. He glared at me. What? You haven't found a way back to Earth yet. Have you tried? We have tried. It's impossible. There's a blockade. I know about the blockade. That shouldn't stop the merry band of pirates. Impossible just means you need to think about it. It's complicated. We might run the blockade, but that would only shorten the time before the Maxalts send another task force to Earth. You heard we trapped their battle group outside the galaxy.
I did.
His shoulder dropped. Also heard about the people we lost.
Colonel, Joe, please. Joe, I'm sorry, those were good people.
They were. There wasn't much else I could say.
What's next?
Working on it.
Doctor, would you like to come with us?
He looked down at his mud-caked work gloves.
I'm keeping busy here. You're an engineer, not a biologist, I appealed to him. We have a Maxalt's warship for you to play with. Lots to learn up there.
He was torn.
Would I be doing anything useful?
Here. He kicked a clod of dirt off one of his shoes. I'm helping prepare this place for new colonists.
Doc. Mark, he insisted.
All right, I agreed. If I wanted him to call me Joe, I would use his first name also.
If we do find a way to Earth, we might not return to Avalon first. Coming with us is your best bet for seeing your family again.
Unless you get us all killed in some crazy scheme you dreamed up.
His words were harsh, but there was the barest hint of a twinkle in his eyes.
Hey, so far you haven't been eaten by a giant lizard, right?
I can't make any more promises.
I forced myself to flash a grin at him.
There is one very important thing you can work on aboard Valkyrie.
What's that?
Thinking up how to get us back to Earth. I'm not doing all that shit by myself.
He laughed.
Fair enough.
Making an effort to be as diplomatic as possible, I was in the docking bay to meet the dropship that brought Sims up from the surface. Reed flew the Panther, leaving only a trainee pilot to fly Valkyrie, but we didn't plan any maneuvers in orbit, and we didn't have many pilots fully qualified to fly the sophisticated Panther, so Reed was extra busy. Reed was pissed at me, too, and that would give her and Sims something to bond over.
Colonel, Sims snapped a salute to me as she stepped onto the deck. Permission to come aboard.
The way she said it was like permission to perform a root canal on myself with a rusty screwdriver. I could not blame her for a lack of enthusiasm.
Permission granted, and thank you.
I glanced at her eyes to see if her expression had softened a bit.
Maybe.
I will show you to your cabin, I offered. You can get a tour of our new flagship later.
Flagship?
Sims said in that tone women use when they say, oh, really? And we have two ships now, I shrugged defensively.
Back when we had our frigate the Flower, we also had two ships, she reminded me.
We have two starships now.
Maybe flagship is pushing it, I admitted.
I know what you meant, sir.
Reed, I leaned into the Panther's door to call our chief pilot.
Come with us?
I'm kind of busy getting the Panther shut down, she objected.
Let your co-pilot handle that. It's good training.
The truth was, I didn't want to be alone with Sims just yet, and needed Reed as a social buffer. The two of them liked each other, and had worked well as a team. Sims and I needed to ease into a new working relationship.
Ah, Reed gave me a frustrated sigh.
Yes, sir.
She stepped down onto the deck and handed me a bottle.
Compliments of Colonel Chang, she explained.
It was a bottle of Japanese whiskey. Hopefully, he had kept another bottle for himself aboard the Flying Dutchman.
I will thank him, I gestured to the two women to walk with me.
We'll stop by my cabin first so I can put this away.
My idea to bring Reed with us worked perfectly, proving I am a certified genius. While I walked ahead, Reed got Sims caught up on current events and pointed out features of our new warship.
The two of them talking took all of the pressure off me to keep a conversation going, and hopefully gave Sims time to adjust to the new reality. When we got to my cabin, I forgot how big it was, even compared to the spacious typical cabin aboard our battlecruiser. Turning toward Sims, I gestured toward the open doorway.
The cabins here are much bigger than the cubby holes we had aboard the Dutchman. This one is too big. I chose it for proximity to the bridge, and they both squealed and burst out laughing at whatever was behind me.
What the?
I turned around to see what was so funny. It was a bot. A robot that looked sort of like a bulky floor lamp with arms and a basket on top. That bot we inherited from the previous crew. It was a Maxulx device that Skippy had reprogrammed. He had to wipe its original programming as best he could, because the ship's native control AI, which Skippy had not been able to replace yet, would have used the bots to murder all of us while we were sleeping. The bot was not the problem. What the bot was doing was not the problem either. Skippy had tasked it for domestic duties like cleaning, laundry, and light maintenance. The thing was taking clothing from the basket on its head and carefully putting the clothes away in bins that slid out of a cabinet on the bulkhead of my cabin. The bot was doing its job correctly. All the bins, except the four it was using, were secured, so they and their contents did not go flying around the cabin if the ship moved abruptly. What the bot was doing with the clothing was not the problem. The clothing was. As I opened my mouth to yell for Skippy, the bot took two folded items of clothing from the basket. They were a bra, and I think the other is called a bustier. Kind of like a corset or a girdle with a bra on top. Well, duh, of course the bra was on top. Don't know why I had to mention that. Anyway, the bra was yellow with lace and maybe pretty flowers. Clearly not something intended for everyday wear under a uniform top, unless I truly know nothing about women. I actually, forget what I said. I do know nothing about women. The bustier? It was pink and had those little straps that hold up stockings, and that I was sure was not everyday wear under a uniform. Damn, the women aboard our ship were having a lot more fun than I was. Or maybe they just wanted to feel like they could have fun so far from home. It was not any of my business who that intimate apparel belonged to. It was my business what the hell it was doing in my cabin. Before I could yell for Skippy, Sims caught my eye. The glare in her eyes had been replaced by a twinkle. I'm not judging, sir. I could feel my face turning bright red. Sims, those are not... But... She giggled and Reed snorted. If you want to get that bustier fastened, you need to really suck in your stomach. I don't think the bra will fit either, Reed observed. Skippy! I roared at him. Oh, for... He grunted. What is it this time? Why are ladies' garments being put into my cabin? What? That is odd. You think? Oh, I meant what you said is odd. Seriously, who says ladies' garments? Answer the question, please. Is this the ship's AI screwing with me? Sadly, no, because that at least would be entertaining. Nope, this is a simple error. A mistranslation of the laundry classification system I installed in the bots. Those lacy things belong to... Do not tell me, I do not want to know. Why does that... Because if I knew who owned that stuff, I will think of it every time I see her. I don't want that. And she sure as hell doesn't want that. Crap. Actually, considering how small our crew was and the size of the clothing, I could guess who those things belong to. Oh, got it. Okay, I am retasking that bot. Sorry, he laughed. About that. Sims shook her head slowly, exaggerating the gesture for effect.
We have a new ship, but the more things change,